Yo, hey, we are back with another episode of Dialogue Heavy and with yours truly, Michael Anthony McMillan. Good morning, good evening, good night, wherever you are. Thank you for listening to your boy. So, as you know, we got to be intentional and deliberate with everything we want in this life. So I will tell you two things. One, that I want to share these stories with my family, friends, and fans. And two, hopefully garner the attention, you know, the people that can help me get these stories out to a mass audience and share my stories with the world. And that's that. So we are continuing with this story, Hindsight, the story of an older black man named Bernard, Mr. Beansy. And he has a problem. He is an older man that has no prospects and no other forms of income, and he is about to get kicked out of his job in 2 weeks, and he has to figure out what to do with his life. And he's thinking that he's going to rob the place. Now, in the chapter two, he realized through a resident who lives where he works at the Waldorf Estates, she told him everything that was about to happen, the 2 weeks and how the board decided to fire him and how he was not going to be rehired. By the new company that was going to be taken over, and the company that he worked for, Elite Door Services, Doorman Services, was actually closing their door. So even his company was closing their business. So he was screwed all the way around. We also learned of him that he was a major gambler. So he had some run-ins with some not so desirable people in the mafia. And we learned his whole take on how it was his vice. And it often got him in trouble and almost killed a few times. So that's what we got on him in the last chapter. And we're going to see how Bernard is going to try to navigate this situation and try to get what he feels he deserves. And he's going to try to take some people with him to help him out. So we'll see what happens in chapter three. So without further ado, I bring to you chapter three of Hindsight. And as you know, everything on the Dialogue Heavy podcast thus far has been written and recited by yours truly, Michael Anthony McMillan. So, Hindsight, chapter three. Here we go. The first thing I heard the first couple dozen times I called Frederico was, "Fuck you, man," followed by a dial tone. And look, I deserved it. I wasn't necessarily there for him when he got canned, but now I needed his help when I was about to be. It was selfish, and he was hurt. And unlike the white racist bigots that were ready to kick my black ass to the curb to save a few bucks, the black and brown community had a code, an unspoken rule to take care of each other, and I hadn't done that. But I did have an opportunity of a lifetime for him and me. And like the two assholes said in the bathroom, this was business, not personal. So Federico was going to have to get over his anger. That is, if he didn't want to stay broke for the rest of his life. So after about 100 more calls and hangups on Fred's side, he finally said more than fuck you, but he was far from letting me off the hook. I couldn't just blurt out that I wanted to rob Mr. Calhoun, so I talked about other stuff, like how he and his family was doing since the split from the Waldorf. And lucky for me, everything for him had turned to shit. "I'm telling you, man," he said, "I can't work. I can't find work. Lola work every day, two jobs, and nobody want to pay me." I knew exactly where he was coming from. And I don't have to tell you that a man doesn't feel quite like a man unless he's working for his family, no matter how hard the labor. But for immigrant families, that was divorce territory. Look, today's situations are different. Men can be house husbands, take care of the kids and home, while the wife goes out and brings home the bacon. But for baby boomers like Fred and I, that didn't happen. Daddy is daddy and gets the big piece of chicken when he pays for it. But as soon as he can't, he's just that nigga on the couch taking up valuable real estate and eating up all the food. I finally convinced Federico to sit with me at Poncho's, a tiny tequila bar in Hell's Kitchen not far from his place. And after a few too many añejo shots, I told him how just in a few days I'd be next to him in the line of the unemployed. And ironically, it was Federico that initiated what I had already planned. "Pinche blancos ricos," Federico said after I spoke of the bathroom story. The racially mixed working class that filled the bar were probably sharing their own versions of bad breaks that didn't pay much mind to either one of us. "Yeah," I said while tossing back yet another shot. "We could rob them, man," he said. "Yeah," I said. How do you suppose we do that? Yo no sé. Of course he didn't know. That was my department. But still, at that point, with his alcohol level being twice over the driving limit, I couldn't tell if Fred was just talking or if he meant it. But I figured if I let just a little bit of my plan go and he didn't bite, I could play it off as two drunk, disgruntled coworkers blowing steam. You know, I said, we probably could get away with it with the right plan. Yeah, Federico said, with his eyebrows raised. Yeah, I mean, I know somebody in that place carries cash. And if we set it up right, we can get it, split it, and go our separate ways before anybody notices. Nah, Federico said. Necesitamos mucho dinero o no podemos. What? I said to Federico. It means a lot of money, man. Mucho dinero o no puedo, papa. Yeah, well, what's a lot to you? I said. A million? Two? Federico tilted his head back with his brows raised and watched the TV screen above the bar before he came to what he thought was a reasonable solution. 250, man. $250 million, Fred? Ugh. Mil. 250,000. Oh, I said surprised. 250,000? You can't even buy a brownstone with that. And that's when Federico smiled while watching a player from the Cuban national baseball team score a walk-off grand slam. Aquí? No. Pero en Cuba? Sí. And with that, I knew Federico was serious. And more importantly, he thought about what was to come for him and his family afterwards. That night, Federico enlightened me of things even I didn't know about the Waldorf, like the building's weak spots and underground escape routes that the doormen weren't akin to. And I told him of Mr. Calhoun, the cash, and the possible mafia connections. I didn't know if it was Federico's hatred for the Waldorf, his financial desperation, or the booze talking, but he didn't seem too concerned about the death that loomed if you fucked with La Cosa Nostra. But he told me nothing could compare to his upbringing in a third world country where dying from starvation wasn't an anomaly. The carnage and countless bodies he saw in his youth floating in the ocean while trying to escape to America carried more PTSD than most humans could take. So if the mafia had the balls to go to Cuba and find him after our plan succeeded, he was fine with that. And he was fine with the consequences. So now Federico was on board. My task was to get the rest of the team together, finalize the plan, and execute it without getting everyone involved executed. But I'd need more info first. The next day was the day after the first NBA playoff game of the year, with the Knicks losing, as usual, to the Miami Heat. That year, most would have assumed that, but because they only lost by one, the spread didn't cover. So all the degenerates that bet against their hometown team to get their ass completely handed to them actually lost money. I hung around at Big A's, an unlicensed gambling house I used to frequent when I wasn't in charge of my own life, and soon found Dino collecting his winnings, smiling ear to ear. A's was a little one-story hovel with one way in and out, and like most unlicensed joints, it looked like nothing from the outside, and you wouldn't pay any attention to it. But on the inside, it was magical. There were endless rows of tables that mirrored any and every game you could find in Vegas, with green felt tops and the soft black padding. The dealers wore weird white shirts where the sleeves go halfway up their forearm, and the waitresses in their short skirts and stockings walked around offering tasty spirits and finger foods. Smoke clouded the dark joint, only being cut through by the overhead light, shining a light on the action of the table it hung over, and the players were of every variety of fiend, from coked up stockbrokers to back alley dope dealers. My heart skipped a few beats the second I walked in and smelt the familiar aroma of stale tobacco and cheap liquor, but this time I wasn't there for the pennies on the table. That time I was there to beat the house. Dino was raking more than he was dishing. You can tell because he was smiling, one, and two, you can see the imprint of his brass knuckles through his leather jacket. If some poor loser didn't have the the pay up money, there was gonna be blood. I watched from afar at a 5-card table where I was betting nickels and dimes and shuddered at the memory. Dino's usual spiel was to pay a visit to the losers, take what was his by any means necessary, then set up bets for the next game. And then when that was done, Dino partook in women and liquor like no other. Thinking about it now, I'm sure that's the reason why he was never promoted up the ranks after all those years. Even if he had made his share of money for the organization, he was a liability and he had weaknesses too easily seen. Beansy! Dino yelled drunk from the other side of the room once he saw me at a table. You son of a bitch, where you been, huh? Oh, hi, Dino, I said. I thought you quit gambling. I did, but, you know, bad habits die hard. Dino belted out a laugh. Ha ha! And slapped me so hard on the back that I dropped the only good hand I had had the whole night, and immediately everyone else at the table folded. Now this guy, Dino said, looking at no one in particular, has more lives than a fucking cat. You know how many times I've almost killed this cocksucker? The rest of the guys at the table forced smiles across their face while Dino's henchmen stayed solid as a stone. Man, I was sure I'd never see you again, but here you are, in the flesh. Yep, I said with a firm, embarrassed grin. The dealer shuffled the cards for the next hand, and Dino not so whispered in my ear. I could barely concentrate on the table off the rank smell of scotch and shit seeping poison out of his mouth. Hey, what you got on the Knicks Heat game, game 2? I got a sweet deal for you. Now that put me in a pickle, because everyone knew you couldn't insult a man of Dino's reputation, so to deny a bet in public to him would have been bad for me. But putting a bet in would also put me back in his pocket, and that I couldn't do. Game 2? I said. Not looking him in the eye. I don't know. The Heat didn't look as good as I thought they would. Ha! Dino said as he gripped my shoulder. And thank God for that, no? Yeah, I said. But let me think about it and I'll give you a wager before I leave. You bet your ass you will, Dino said before returning back to the bar where another shot of Johnny Walker was sitting for his consumption. As the night went on, I moved further and further away from Dino and his crew and eventually made it to a social table where the Knights defeated whined about bad beats and the pissed off wives they would go home to. Neither Dino or his goons were checking for me anymore, but I was definitely watching them and listening to everything Dino apparently couldn't wait to share. It turned out that Dino was a very disgruntled employee of the Phantom Wise Guy's business, and he felt like it was time for a change at the top. He thought the ways of old were old and that he can bring the organization up to speed, but the old guard didn't see it that way. Gambling and women were great and they made their businesses bones for a long time on that alone. Few were harmed and the police rarely needed to get involved, but Dino thought drugs were the future, just like prohibition of liquor was for them in the past. He said if he could keep it respectable, keep it with the niggas and the spicks, they could make a killing without poisoning their own. Now, of course, I had my own opinion on that and was pissed that they thought so little of us, but again, the mantra of business, not personal, rang in my ear, and my patience paid off when he finally mentioned the name I knew. Like that Jew Calhoun in Manhattan. They idolize this prick. They send Bugsy up there every month to take a boatload of his cash to the islands. And for what? For a couple of no-show electrician jobs at the waterfront? Fucking stupid. He's a kike, for God's sakes. Take his load, give it to me to start the cash cow, and tell him to go fuck himself when he comes crying. Simple as that. Amongst Dino's crew, listening to his nonsense was the A's bar opener, a slimy fat fuck named Aurelio. He was a half-assed partner with the organization, or so he thought, and talked a big game when none of them were around. I personally never dealt with them, but players talk, and as I was always told, he talked too much and threw his weight around like he was a made guy or something. to be honest, Aurelio was the only one that made sense while Dino spouted out his soliloquy about work that night. But he would pay for it with every syllable he uttered. "Well," Aurelio said, "they have a reason to keep him around, no? Probably some big money coming from that Jew to them." And in an instant, Dino went from whistling Dixie to a cold-blooded murderer and looked at Aurelio as such. But being the idiot dope I'd heard about, Mr. A, Aurelio, did not catch Dino's body cues. And he continued on. "Those Jews are good with the numbers, Dino. You better listen to the higher-ups." Oh, how I cringed for Aurelio when I heard him utter those words, "You better listen." And just as I closed my eyes in anticipation, I heard the shattering of glass and a body hit the ground. Dino's goons stood back and watched Aurelio take his beating like people waiting in line at the DMV. Blood sprayed the back of the bar mirror and all over the liquor bottles. And as I cringed over and over again at every stomping of the guy's head into the floor, it sounded horrible. It was horrible, and a reminder of why I vowed to never take a bet again. But being that it wasn't my head down there anymore, I shut my mouth and continued to be a bystander at the back corner. $10 million, huh?" Dino said as he gave the last kick to Aurelio's ribs. "Oh, I'm shaking down store owners for pennies while these fucks take a jet to the Bahamas. Dino, one of his goons finally said, but he didn't intervene. "What?" Dino replied. "You want some too?" "Nah, man, I'm just saying." "You're just saying what?" Dino said and looked down at the bartender holding his stomach while his mouth looked like he gargled red paint. "Next time, you'll just pour when I tell you to pour, right?" "Yeah," the bartender pleaded. "Yeah?" Dino said as he kicked him one last time in the teeth. "Oh!" He worked the guy so hard he was sweating himself. "I was thinking the same thing." Dino corrected his jacket and smoothed his hair back into place with a comb and never looked once at the crowd to see if there was a snitch in it. People like Dino didn't have to. Once Dino was satisfied with himself, he nodded to a tall goon that was in the corner and walked out of the A's bar. The goon peeled off a few hundreds from his wad and dropped them close to Aurelio's head as they left, but not before he told them the golden lesson that Dino should have taken a class in. "You keep your mouth shut." And then just like that, they were all gone. The coast was clear and the last goon was out of sight. And that's when the bar staff came and helped the bartender. And in the dark, at the back of A's, I knew that I had $10 million of dirty money that awaited Frederico and I. We just had to claim it. But if I didn't dot every I and cross every T, what happened to Aurelio that night would be all I could hope for, but it definitely wouldn't be what I would receive. And boom! What'd you guys think, guys? Chapter 3 of Hindsight. Oh man, this guy Beansy, man, he's walking a tight rope, or thin ice, as they say. He hasn't done anything just quite yet, but is I don't know. I wouldn't be testing these type of waters, but that's the reason why we write these stories, right? Yeah, so we got to see what he got going on. He finally is hooked back up with Frederico, who's his friend again. Hope you guys were okay with the Spanish stuff. I kind of explained it within the thing, but yeah. Fred only wants $250,000 to go back to Cuba and live his life out there with his wife. I guess it goes a longer way over there. And we have to see what happens. We're gonna have to see what happens. So yeah, that's all I got for you guys, man. That's it, that's all. And that's another episode of Dialogue Heavy Hindsight. And I will try, you know, this is a holiday weekend, it's about to be Thanksgiving. But I'm going to try to get this this next chapter completely done and solidified for you and recorded for next week. So I'll see you then. Until then, I'm out of here. Peace.